This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, the state of affairs for international religious freedom is worsening. That, according to the just-released annual report of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Commissioner Cliff May is here with the details in just a moment. And want to guess how much the tax burden has grown for each American over the last 60 years? Go ahead, write down your estimate on the per capita percentage increase since 1961. And then CNSNews.com editor-in-chief Terry Jeffrey will give us the answer. Also, some parents in California have had enough of religious indoctrination by the San Diego Unified School District. They're pushing back on the school's Muslim-themed lessons in the classroom. Their attorney, Charles Lamandry, with Freedom of Conscience Defense Fund, joins me later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home, it's all archived there at TonyPerkins.com. You can check it out later tonight. If you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins, the way to keep up with what's happening. All right, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom released its 2017 annual report last week on the state of religious freedom in the world. With us now is Cliff May, a commissioner with the commission and president of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Cliff was appointed to the commission in 2016 by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Cliff, welcome to Washington Watch. Cliff, let's start with the overarching theme of the report. According to, and I've read through the report, the commission sees religious freedom worldwide as becoming, well, threatened in many, many countries.
It's not been good, probably ever. But we are not seeing improvements. And I think for a while, what could have been a few years ago, one might have been hopeful about that. But at this point, we think it's probably worsening. And of course, the most obvious and egregious is that you have the rise of Islamism, of jihadism, in so many parts of the world, and the Islamists and the jihadists are attacking all religious minorities that remain, in particularly in the broader Middle East. The worst, of course, is the genocide of Christians, of Yazidis, and some other minorities in Syria and Iraq. We're seeing the possibility of these ancient religious communities being wiped out once and for all, exterminated absolutely forever. And I would argue that there's no violation of religious freedom that's more lethal and more egregious than extermination. I mean, communities can bounce back from terrible oppression and persecution, but once they're wiped out, that's the end of it.
Well, you write about this in the Washington Times. I read your piece there where you point out this is a very serious issue because when you lose the freedom of religion, the other freedoms are not far behind.
Well, not only that, I would almost go in the other direction and say that the most basic freedom is the right to, in your heart, in your brain, to believe or not believe what you want, the right to worship. If you don't have that, you're certainly not going to have freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, all the freedoms in the Bill of Rights that I hope Americans still hold dear. You have to build on the most basic, which is in your heart of hearts, you get to believe what you want to believe or not believe what you want to believe. And if you don't start there, you're not going to get any further.
Now, the report, there's a new country on the list for the first time in the top tier of countries of concern, of particular concern. Tell our listeners that new country that's on the list.
And just so people understand, there are 193 countries in the world. We look at particularly at 36 of them that we consider to be important. Of those, there are 10 that are designated as CPCs, that is, countries of particular concern. That's where the violations of religious freedom are most egregious. We make our recommendations to Congress, to the State Department, and to the President regarding this and other matters of religious freedom. There are countries we think should be designated as CPCs that the State Department hasn't yet, but at the end of the day, the State Department's designation is most consequential. Now, the one that we, in particular, I think we have to add at this point is Russia. It's a new, from the point of view of the commission of USERF, it's a new CPC, country of particular concern, recommendation based on its intensified violations of religious freedom in Russia proper and in neighboring Ukraine. One of the worst parts is the absolute banning of Jehovah's Witnesses on April 20th. This is a group that is pacifist. This is a group that's no threat to the government, and yet they are entirely banned.
What I find fascinating about that, Cliff, is because it was in the mid-1990s that the doors were wide open in Russia to Christians from around the world, and in particular the United States, went there to evangelize. They were in the schools. They were welcomed everywhere. And in less than two decades, we see this crackdown on religion in Russia.
You're right, and we do. And I guess I would say that the most apparent reason is that President Putin believes that Russia should be Russian Orthodox and that other religions shouldn't be butting in and competing for the faithful. And so he has been cracking down, particularly on those religions that that may seek converts. Again, seeking converts is another freedom. First, you believe what you believe, and you say, okay, if you want to seek converts. People have the right to make up their own mind. But we just start with, can you believe what you want to believe? Can you worship as you want to worship? Or are those most basic freedoms violated? Are those suppressed? And when you ban a religion, of course, that's absolutely the case.
And, of course, kind of a guideline for the work that the commission does goes back to the 1948 Declaration of Human Rights, which, as they state out in religious freedom, is the ability to change one's religion if you so choose.
That's exactly right. And what we're seeing in too many countries, Pakistan would be one of them, which is not on the State Department list as a country of particular concern, and I think, and we think, at USERF, that it ought to be. You have blasphemy laws. You have laws against conversion. You have laws that where you get capital punishment if, for example, a Muslim wants to convert and become a Christian. You may have blasphemy laws in other countries as well, but the idea of capital punishment for conversion, that's a particularly, I would say, Islamist idea, that you don't have that freedom to change your religion. And that's particularly true in Pakistan, where you have Christians. One of the more famous cases is that of a woman by the name of Asia Bibi, a Christian in Pakistan. She fetched some water for some Muslim neighbors. From what we understand, one of the Muslim neighbors said, I won't drink it. It's unclean. It comes from a Christian. She said, aren't we human beings like you are? Don't know what else exactly was said, but Asia Bibi was arrested some years ago. Put on trial for blasphemy, for insulting the prophet, for insulting Islam. The governor of Punjab, Tasir Salim, he defended her and said blasphemy laws are not something we should have here, particularly like this. He was assassinated by his own bodyguard. And Asia Bibi remains in prison to this day.
Hmm. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest, Cliff May. He is a commissioner with the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Cliff, walk our listeners through how the commission goes about identifying those countries that should be on this list of countries of particular concern.
Sure. It's a bipartisan commission. There have been five Democrats and four Republicans. As soon as Trump appoints a new commissioner, it will be five Republicans and four Democrats, but we try to operate in a bipartisan manner as much as we possibly can. We also have a staff of about 15 full-time. The commissioners are voluntary. They don't get paid. Most of us have day jobs. With the help of the staff, we're studying what's going on in all these countries and keeping up with it. The commissioners do make trips to various countries to do fact-finding on the ground. I went to Saudi Arabia in February on such a trip. Another delegation of commissioners, I wasn't on this one, went recently to Pakistan, went to the Central African Republic. And so we try to learn what's going on. It's not the easiest thing to do, but there were various scholarly and other sources that we use. And at the end of the day, we try to make our decisions about which countries are of particular concern, which countries we're recommending that we think the State Department should consider that, and what should be done about it, whether it's diplomacy, whether it's sanctions, whether there are other things that should be done. We try to figure out what are our priorities. And again, one of the priorities since I've been on the commission is the genocide taking place against Christians and other religious minorities in the Middle East.
Are you hopeful with an administration that has expressed greater concern for religious freedom both here and abroad that the commission's work may be taken more seriously?
I'm hopeful. We haven't had a I've just actually come just before this from the State Department. I met with Pam Pryor, who you know, and who sends you her regards, and who is very interested in this area and works in this area. Pretty soon, we believe there will be a U.S. ambassador appointed for international religious freedom, and I think that that's helpful as well. The ambassador for religious freedom is an ex officio member of USERF, of the commission. There are a lot of priorities and a lot of urgent matters for this administration to deal with. I happen to think the president did a pretty good job in his most recent trip to the Middle East and Europe. But we're hopeful that this administration will take seriously this most fundamental right and will work closely with us and will listen to our recommendations. We hope so. We think this is a big challenge, and I do think that if you care about human rights at all, you've got to start with this one, which is the right to believe or not believe.
Cliff, I'm going to go back to the report that was just released, the 2017 report from the commission. First, I want you to list that top tier of 10 countries that the commission has identified as countries of particular concern. And then I would ask you, any surprises in this year's report as you helped put this together?
Yep, exactly. Yep. So the 10 right now, the USERF did recommend that the State Department once again designate 10 countries as CPCs, because these governments are involved in systematic, ongoing, and really egregious violations of religious freedom. And those countries would be Burma and China and Eritrea, absolutely Iran, obviously North Korea. Saudi Arabia has made some progress, but it's still on that list. The Sudan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. USERF also believes that there are 6 other countries that meet the standard. One is the Central African Republic, one is Nigeria, Pakistan, as I mentioned, Russia, as we talked about, Syria and Vietnam. Now, Russia was something of a surprise. It was also a surprise that the commission said perhaps Egypt and Iraq should not be countries of particular concern, not because things are better there. They're obviously not a place like Egypt. We saw what happened last weekend. A group of Egyptian Christians going to a monastery are assaulted by ISIS and mowed down with automatic weapons. What we do believe, there was recently a trip of commissioners over there, I was not on that one, that the government of President Sisi is making an attempt to protect the Christian population, is allowing the rebuilding of churches after they've been destroyed, is working hard, not necessarily successfully, but it's a matter of competence more than anything else, that there is an effort underway in Egypt to protect this religious minority. It's about 10% of the population right now. That's about 9 million people who are Christians in Egypt and who also are in danger of being wiped out. They've been leaving as well, not the way the Syrian Christians have, not to that extent, not the way the Iraqi Christians have, but they are an endangered community, absolutely. But we think that Sisi deserves some encouragement because he's trying. He's also a Muslim leader who every day is fighting jihadists on the ground in Sinai.
I would agree. I do think he's doing, he is trying. And we give him credit for that. Cliff, we're out of time. I want to thank you for stopping by and want to get you back on to talk more about this issue. It's something our listeners care a lot about.
My pleasure.
All right. Cliff May with the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. To find out more, if you'd like to read his piece that was in the Washington Times, go to TonyPerkins.com. Coming up, what percentage increase do you think the per capita tax burden has increased for Americans, adjusted for inflation, over the last 60 years? Well, when we come back, Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com, is here to crunch the numbers. Don't go away.
It's happening everywhere, and not just in blue states. Radical LGBT activists are forcing potentially dangerous policies on schools, businesses, and other public places, violating the safety and privacy of women and threatening religious freedom. How can churches help protect their community and be a voice for the vulnerable on these issues? What can state legislators do to push back against local ordinances and federal efforts to allow men into girls' showers, restrooms, and locker rooms? What can parents and voters do? In a special one-hour program, FRC President Tony Perkins is joined by Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, and others, including experts and victims, to talk about what some states are doing to protect the safety and privacy of women and children and to defend the freedom to believe. Visit frc.org/privacy to view this event and many more.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I love to lead people to Jesus Christ as a layman outside the walls of the church. It's been said you should give while you're living so you know where you're going when you're going. But giving what? 1 Corinthians 13 puts it in perspective by saying, if I gave everything I have to the poor and even sacrificed my body, I could boast about it. But if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. More than giving, it's the motivation behind your giving that's important to God. Being generous doesn't confirm the condition of one's heart towards God. It may have more to do with self-love and attempt to ease the conscience or to achieve public recognition. That's why Jesus gave loving your neighbor as yourself equal status with loving him. For when you do that, the motivation of your generosity with your time and resources is laser focused on leading everyone to Jesus. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everybody you're with today closer to Jesus. If you want to know how easy that is, go to ROTW.com.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, are you ready for this? Real federal taxes per capita have more than doubled since John F. Kennedy served as president and made the case for lower taxes to spur on economic growth. Now, that comes to us from a report by Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com, who is with us now. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
You come up with some of the most interesting pieces, and it was on Drudge. I saw it this morning as I was scanning the news. And what prompted you to go back and look at this growth in taxes over the last 60 years?
Well, like most Americans who work and have a family and pays taxes, I'm not real happy about having to pay a big federal tax bill. And what I wanted to look at yesterday was the trend in taxes per capita and per worker. And so I pulled up the data from the Office of Management and Budget, which has the historical total tax numbers, and I got the number of workers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and I got the number of people from the Census Bureau. And when I just started looking through the historical trend, it seemed to be remarkable that just since the time of Jack Kennedy, per capita taxes have more than doubled, and per worker taxes have skyrocketed also. And Jack Kennedy, a lot of people today may not realize it, but he was a president who argued for lower taxes and basically was a supply-sider like Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, very similar. You go in your piece, you're talking about in the federal tax revenues equaled about $514 per capita in 1961. Now, and you adjust that for inflation, so in 2016 dollars, that would be $4,121. But when you compare with what the government is raking in today, that number has grown tremendously, has it not?
That's right. In fiscal 2016, which is the latest year where they have the actual numbers for, taxes per capita equaled $10,114. For each and every one of the 323-plus million people that we had in the country last year. So that is a real increase of 145% from 1961. It's significantly more than doubled. It really, when you think about it, Tony, the other thing when I was thinking about it when I was looking at this, everybody knows not everybody works. Obviously, kids don't work, but unfortunately, right, in America today, we have a lot of able-bodied adults who don't work, and they're not all stay-at-home moms. So not everybody is paying taxes. And so I wanted to look at, what about people who work? And when you look at people who actually had a job back in 1962, the taxes the federal government collected then were $12,524, that's 2016 dollars, for every person who had a job. Last year it was $21,629 for every single person who had a job, and that means a full-time job or a part-time job. So if you have a mom and dad who both work and a teenage kid who works at McDonald's, those three workers, they were collecting $21,629 in taxes for each of them.
Wow. Well, when I read that, the first question that came to mind for me was, what has the government done with that? I mean, what have we seen in terms of government, the growth in government? Is this for national security? Are we spending more money on national security? What are we spending this on?
You know what? I mean, interesting. It's an interesting question. I went and looked at this today, again, using the Office of Management and Budget numbers. And what has happened has been a complete turning upside down of the government since John F. Kennedy was president. Back in 1962, the federal government spent 49% of all the money it spent on national defense. And it spent 29.6% on what the OMB calls, quote-unquote, human resources. That includes most of the social programs, plus Social Security and Medicare. Last year, the federal government spent 15.4% of its money on national defense and 73.2% on the human resources spending. And in just raw dollars, the human resource federal social spending per capita in constant dollars went from $1,353 in 1962 to $8,728 last year. So for every single person in the country, every newborn baby, every 85-year-old man, the federal government spent $8,728 on social programs and Social Security and Medicare last year.
Wow. That sounds like another article in the making there, when we've seen a reversal, especially given how dangerous of a world we live in today, where we've seen almost 50% of federal spending that was on defense drop down to, what did you say, 12%?
Yeah, and we're down to 15.4% last year, from 49 down to 15.4. We're seeing literally a total inversion of the federal government. Tony, when I was working on this column yesterday and I pulled up a speech that John F. Kennedy gave at the Economic Club of New York in December of 1962. And I found that the speech is available not only through the University of California, Santa Barbara, in its text, but elsewhere there is a recording, an audio recording of it on the Internet. And I listened to Kennedy give the speech. And, it's amazing to hear John F. Kennedy, a Democratic president, saying what he was worried about because of what he believed was excess taxation of the American people in 1962, is that we're killing economic growth. And the greatness of America was dependent on the freedom of its people and its economic growth. And in order to spur better economic growth, we need to get government off the backs of the people. And you know what was interesting? There wasn't a single word of class war rhetoric in John F. Kennedy's speech. He said we need to cut taxes for people in the highest brackets and the lowest brackets. We need to cut it for individuals and for corporations. We need to get out of the way, and we need to let the American people create wealth like they always have done in the past because they were free. That was John F. Kennedy in 1962.
Well, I think Donald Trump should just, next time he gets up to give his economic program, should just punch play and let the nation listen to, let the Democrats listen to John F. Kennedy. Terry Jeffrey, as always, great to have you on the program. A fascinating article. Appreciate you joining us to talk about it.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, I encourage you to read it. It'll just show you how government has grown and how much it's costing us. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. This stuff's very important. You know, where we spend our money tells us a lot. We're carrying a heavy burden. All right, when we come back, parents in California pushing back against religious indoctrination of the Islamic faith. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Apparently, a lot of traders are waiting for pending home sales. And, of course, the Fed is speaking. So they're going to be waiting for what the Fed may indicate. I don't think the Fed's going to tell us anything new other than indicate what they've been indicating. We are looking at another rate hike, and all likelihood will be in the middle of June. Some good news coming out of the Eurozone and some bad news. The bad news is, according to Fox News, sources are saying that President Trump is going to pull out of the Paris Accord. Now, that's great from my perspective, and it's going to save about $1 billion of U.S. taxpaying dollars going into this. And of course, I would expect most of this is going to fall apart because nobody else is going to ante up. I'm sure they were depending on the U.S. putting in their $1 billion. That $1 billion is going to be better spent elsewhere. That is for certain. It looks like oil prices continue their slide and are likely going to continue their slide, according to the futures anyway. And we are seeing this disbelief by investors that the extended production caps of major oil producers are going to do much to really slow down the growth of oil, even in the midst of the summer driving season. So they don't have any confidence that we are going to see any consistent drain on inventories. I agree with that 100%, but we did get good news out of China and Japan. Both look like manufacturing and factory orders are up. That should mean a little bit more demand on oil, and that could help the sector as well.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. Last month, the San Diego Board of Education approved an anti-Islamophobia initiative in a purported effort to combat bullying and harassment of Muslim students and their families. Well, as a part of the initiative, Muslim students will be provided with special religious accommodations that other students do not have. Teachers must receive new training and resources on how to advocate for Muslims. And the school district must review and vet its curriculum to ensure that it promotes a positive interpretation of Muslim culture and history. That means you can't read the newspaper. And that was sarcasm, all right? But concerned parents are pushing back and have filed a lawsuit. Joining us now is their attorney, Charles Lamandry, who is with the Freedom of Conscience Defense Fund and is representing them, as I said, in the case. And he filed a lawsuit against the San Diego Unified School District on behalf of the parents. Charles, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you again, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Well, okay. What's the complaint that the parents are making in court?
Threefold, basically, that the new Islamophobia program violates both the federal and state constitutions on the grounds that, one, it is showing a preference for one religion over another religion in violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, and, two, there's an entanglement of government and this organization, which touts itself as a religious organization, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, which helped formulate and is supposedly helping to implement the program. And the third major problem with it, under the constitutional analysis Lemon test, whether the purpose and effect are themselves constitutionally acceptable. Here, the purpose ostensibly is to prevent bullying of Muslim students. We believe that is a pretext because there's been no evidence presented that Muslim students are being disproportionately bullied more than any other student of any other religion. And when we've tried to get that information, the only thing the district has had to offer is that in the last half of last year, there were 7 bullying incidents involving religion, none of which they could identify as because a student was a Muslim. It could have been a Christian, it could have been a Jew, it could have been some other religion. And that's out of 130,000, out of 130,000 students. So there is no bullying problem. This is just an opportunity for CARE to help fulfill their expressed mission and purpose, which is to spread Islam and the influence of Muslims in the United States. And they picked an ultra-liberal school board here in San Diego. We've got less than 1% of our population in San Diego County is Muslim. So it's not likely that there would be a significant percentage of Muslim students in the schools who would even be bullied. And again, no data to suggest that they have been bullied. So all the things that you mentioned in the opening of the program, which is part of this comprehensive and holistic approach to address this problem that doesn't exist, is part of an effort on CARE's behalf to try to influence our culture in favor of accepting Islam. Now, of course, they can do that through political channels, but they're not entitled to use the public school system for that purpose. And basically, Tony, that's the bottom line here. It's an unconstitutional use of the public school system where you have impressionable, vulnerable children being exposed to political and ideological as well as religious viewpoints that, in most instances, are not those reflective of those of their parents or the prevailing culture. And there's no reason for it, no need for it. I've characterized it as a politically correct solution in search of a problem because we see no evidence the problem even exists.
Well, and to that point, they're claiming there's rampant Islamophobia in the schools. But now that you've taken them to court, they're using that as justification for this promotion of Islam. Will they have to put the evidence forward in the courtroom?
Well, sure. Now, this group called CARE, which I mentioned, which is the largest Muslim activist group in the United States, said they did their own survey in California, and that 55% of Muslim students reported they have been subjected to some form of bullying. So that's what they're talking about, the rampant bullying. But when you look at how they define bullying, if someone makes a comment that's critical of Islam, maybe the way the Muslims treat women in their culture, for example, and they're offended by that, that could be a form of bullying. Only 7% of the students in the survey that CARE did, that the district is relying on, said they were exposed to some type of physical bullying. 1% of those said it was on any kind of a frequent basis. Now, of course, we'll all agree that even 1% is too many and that every student should feel safe and secure in having a productive learning experience. But let's not exaggerate the numbers to try to have a wholesale change in the culture and curriculum so that it's favoring one religion over another. As far as we know, probably 1% at least of the Jews and Christians are being bullied on the same type of frequent basis. That would be of concern. And the other problem with this program is stands to chill speech because,
right.
Again, if Muslim students are offended, then students of other faiths might be more inclined to not want to point out some of the ways in which Islam could be inconsistent with their own constitutional government, you know, such as Sharia law.
Right, and free speech, that free speech should, ultimately, you would hope, win the day where people are not muzzled. Charles, we're up against the break. I want to thank you for joining us. We'll track this case very closely, get you back on when there's more developments.
Great. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right. Folks, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over to find out more about this case. But this is happening across the country. We're coming back. Don't go away.
We at the American Family Association believe men should not be allowed to use women's restrooms or dressing rooms. Yet the policy of Target allows just that. Do you agree that this policy poses danger to our women and children? Then sign the Boycott Target Pledge. When you do, you're saying, until Target makes the safety of women and children a priority, I'll shop elsewhere. The good news is the boycott is making a big difference. A Target financial report indicates a dramatic drop in their sales and earnings. And a Wall Street Journal article clearly shows that Target CEO Brian Cornell regrets his company's policy announcement welcoming men to use women's restrooms and dressing rooms. We're convinced that together we can stop this insanity before more women and children become victims. Sign the pledge today and tell others about the boycott. Go to afa.net/target. That's afa.net/target.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Frank Turek, Richard Land, Norman Geisler, Greg Kokel, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. Visit ses.edu for details.
In the book of Isaiah, the word tells us, the grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God endures forever. In the same way, without careful planning, your financial goals could blow away like the seeds of a dandelion. It's never too early or too late to consider how a charitable gift annuity can help you meet the financial goals you've set for your loved ones, your causes, and yourself. Give AFA Foundation a call at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit our website, afafoundation.net. Let us explain how a charitable gift annuity can help you achieve your goals. As we read in Proverbs, the plans of the diligent lead to profit. Our phone number again is 800-326-4543, extension 345, and our website is afafoundation.net.
I'm Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch. Glad to have you tuned in on this Wednesday afternoon. You know, I'm curious, have you parents and others out there, maybe you're a student, from time to time we see this pop up in curriculum around the country where school districts, someone tries to slip this in to really kind of promote the Muslim faith. You know, this is pretty blatant what they're doing in San Diego. Other places, they've kind of worked it into the curriculum to show the Islam in a positive light to the detriment of the other faith, giving it preferential treatment. I don't know. If you've seen something like that, give me a call. Let's talk about that. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Just not sure. You know, open it up to see if you've run across that. And parents, I do hope you're paying attention to what your children are seeing and being taught in the schools. Very dangerous. And again, talked about this many times when we get onto the topic of education. I'm not a big fan of public education, but I understand for many that's it's the only alternative. But you cannot delegate the responsibility you have as a parent. As a Christian parent, God has given you the responsibility to train up your children in the way that they should go. Now, you can delegate the authority, okay, but you still have to be watching. All right, you've got a responsibility to watch and be informed. All right, I want to go back while folks are calling in here. It's 866-372-7234. Go ahead and call in. I'm going to go to the phones in just a moment. I want to address something that came up at the very last minute, literally, of the program yesterday. I believe it was Molly called and brought up a point about American exceptionalism, saying that that's kind of been used to for America to kind of replace Israel. And I don't want to put words in her mouth because I didn't get time for her to expound upon it. But I think I got the gist of what she was saying. And it's there, you go back to colonial America, and there were some who saw America and they wrote about America as the new Israel. That has been, you know, there were some that thought this was the promised land, and they used those terms. And I think many of them used biblical terms because, you know, we were a very biblically literate culture, and those things had great imagery, and they communicated a lot in a very few words because they painted these word pictures. That's not to say that some did not see America literally as replacing Israel, because Israel didn't exist at that point in time from a standpoint as a country. There is a, and I touched on this briefly, kind of a theological holding of what some call replacement theology, that the church replaces Israel, or the Jewish people. I think that is wrong. Romans chapter 11 deals with that, as the Greeks or the Gentiles were grafted in to the vine, which was Israel, the Jewish people. So I discount that, but I want to go to this issue of American exceptionalism, because that is an issue. People take issue with that. Where does that come from? Well, the first reference to this idea, one of the in reading about this, one of the potential starting places, the origin possibly of this, was from the French historian Alexis de Tocqueville, who was in the United States in mid-1800s, and he wrote the book Democracy in America. And he, as he toured around, he looked at what made America so unique and different. Now remember, this was on the heels of the French Revolution as well. It didn't turn out quite the same. And so he pointed to the different things, and he pointed to the fact of, you know, not just what it was, just not just a democracy, but there was this this understanding of our responsibility as citizens, but emanating from our faith. And he pointed to that as a part of America's exceptionalism. Now, you can point to several different things that could lead to an idea that America is an exceptional nation. I mean, we've got great resources. I mean, we're a blessed nation. But we're also kind of a nation that started from scratch. And we brought this Judeo-Christian ethic to the formation, and you could argue from some of the founding documents, like the Mayflower Compact, going back to the beginning, that we're a covenantal nation, that we, not replacing Israel, but a covenant nation like Israel, making a pact with God, saying, hey, we're going to do it your way, and God blessed the nation. You know, as I see it, I think we got to be careful. Being an American and being a Christian is not the same thing. And I think there's sometimes those lines are blurred. You know, being patriotic is great, and I'm a patriot. Look, I've served in our nation's military. I've been a police officer. I've served in public office. I love this country. But I am a citizen of the kingdom first. See, I believe Christians in America should be outstanding model citizens when our nation is in line with the Constitution. As Christians, our allegiance is first and foremost to God. Just as the colonist back during the War for Independence declared no king but Jesus. Now, when a government marginalizes or removes the idea of God and the transcendent truths of God's word from the public realm, it undermines its own authority, especially in the eyes of Christians. We obey government because they are authorities ordained by God. But as Christians, as Peter and John made clear in Acts chapter 4 and 5, if man's laws are in conflict with God's laws, we have to go with God. And so I think we've got to keep that line of distinction between America and the church. Okay? And I'm, you know, I think there are occasions, you know, you have the flag in the church, Memorial Day, we just had it, 4th of July, and we pledge allegiance, but there is a clear line of distinction between our patriotism to this country and our allegiance to the kingdom of God. But this comes back to what made America an exceptional nation, and I think it was this understanding that we're first and foremost We are citizens of God's kingdom, but we've been given stewardship over this nation. And we operate, and that includes the government. The government is under the authority of God. Those transcendent truths, you violate them at you violate them and you pay the price. Now, as I said, we are blessed with natural resources. Our nation was formed unlike the nations we came from in Europe. The historical record would show we are, a covenantal nation that chose to honor God. As a result, he blessed us. And as a result, we became an exceptional nation. And I don't think we should apologize for that. I believe America is an exceptional nation. Now, we lose that when we lose what made us exceptional. All right, I hope that Molly addresses the question you brought up in the closing moments, minutes, seconds of yesterday's program. Okay, 866-372-7234. We're going to go back to what I was talking about. And that was, have you detected in your children's, grandchildren's, children's school, homework, this promotion or this positive, promotion of Islam? Okay, we're going to go to Jacqueline in Dallas, Texas. Jacqueline, welcome to Washington Watch. Jacqueline, go ahead.
Hi.
Yep, go right ahead.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, I was just calling in. Yes, I can't really stress enough. Can you hear me?
Yeah, turn your radio down, Jacqueline. Go ahead.
I'm calling because I'm very passionate about all of this. I'm a mother of three small children. I had my oldest daughter reading before she entered the public school system for kindergarten. I believe that for once in my lifetime, I've seen a president that I can really get behind and believe in. And I believe he is ordained by God. And there is a movement there to actually make America great. And I'm excited for this, but at the same time, I think that we really have to pay attention to our children because they are the future homeless people of the world. They're the future presidents. They're the future leaders. They're the future everything. And if you indoctrinate children in anything, that's what your future will become. So if we're talking about, you know, a hate religion where you're blowing people up and you're moving forward just a ridiculous mentality, then I don't understand why it's being tolerated on the basis of political correctness. And I think also this has a root in mental illness, which we're seeing a rise in medical professionals and politicians and everyone around the nation. They're increasingly we're having a problem with mental illness. And I think that comes from a direct result of blurring the lines of what is what and black and white and right and wrong, because whenever you have no ground to stand on to say this is an absolute truth or this is certain and sure and concrete, then you start floating and drifting and you can't go anywhere without a solid foundation. I mean, it's just like, you know, the wise man built his house on a rock. And I could go on forever about it, but I can't even understand what we're doing whenever we're not just sticking up for what is right and what is according to the Bible, because that's where we need to go.
Well, Jacqueline, I appreciate your call and listening, and I appreciate the fact that as a mother of three that you are paying attention to these matters. And to Jacqueline's point, it was interesting. I was just reading this morning in Paul in his letter to the Romans. He says, you know, remember the exact quote, but to the effect of, if you deny God, you're a fool, and literally there the Greek the term is insane, and when we deny God and His truth, we're either insincere, and we're flippant in making these declarations that God is not real and His truth does not exist, or we're insane. I mean, certainly as we look at the meltdown of society, I think just take a snapshot or look at any newspaper on any given day, and the idea of evolution and that we're evolving to a higher state of being is debunked. When you consider the social ills that plague our society today, and how we're in this moral and cultural downward spiral. And it's because we've denied God and that He exists. The evidence is there. Examine it yourself. Jacqueline, thank you so much for the call. All right, let's go to that Nebraska where Barb is on the line. Barb, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. This is Barb. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go right ahead. How are you today?
Okay. I'm good. And thank you so much for everything you're doing. I listen to you every day on my way home from work, and I just am so thankful for those voices out there for conservative Christian values.
Well, thank you.
The reason I called, I'm kind of nervous. I've never done this before, but...
Oh, you're doing fine.
I have 10 grandchildren, and my oldest one, I was with her one day, and she was doing her homework, and I noticed she actually made a point of showing me, because I talk to them all the time about Christian values and standing up for our country, and I don't always know if I'm getting through, but she showed me that she had some homework where they were teaching her about Islam, and it concerned me a little bit, but I realized we need to learn about other religions, but I just always try to stress to her of our Christian values. But I said, oh, okay, well, if they're teaching you about Islam, then are they teaching you about Christianity too? And she goes, oh, no, we're not a Christian school. And I found it funny that she, at 12 years old, would even come right back with an answer, almost like she'd been given that answer to give people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that really kind of raised a red flag with me. And secondly, I thought and thought about, what can I do? Can I call the school board? Do I raise my concerns? Can I get other parents and grandparents? Because there's always strength in numbers. But I'm still kind of at a loss as, what do I do about that?
Well, I think I do think you talk to some other parents. I think you this is where the school board comes in, talking to your member of the school board. It's always good to have a couple of other parents that would be willing to go and set a meeting with the school board member. Maybe they don't know, and maybe you got an ally in the school board member. See where that leads. But it starts with awareness, and so I appreciate the fact, Barb, that you're paying attention and you know. Take the next step, pull in some more parents, set a meeting with the school board member. If that doesn't accomplish something, I'm sure there are public meetings of the school board. Bring it to the attention of the entire school board, and if they don't respond there, then it becomes a kind of a community project, because I'm sure there are many, many others, Barb, in your community that feel the same way. All right, folks, thanks so much for joining us on this Wednesday afternoon. Once again, we're out of time, unfortunately, but Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow, and I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.